Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM.
The Fan.
And Sports Radio 66 WFAN New York.
Welcome back to The Fan. I'm Lori Rubenson, talking sports here with you, and he has been the play-by-play voice of the New York Giants on the radio since 1995. Welcome to the program, Bob Papa. Thanks for being here.
Lori, I hope you're doing well, and I hope you're being safe.
I am. I'm actually here in my home studio for the first time instead of at the WFAN studios. So let's start with that, Bob. How are you coping with coronavirus, and how are you?
Well, we're doing well. Obviously, it's pretty scary. I'm doing my Sirius XM NFL radio show every morning from my apartment here in Weehawken. And I actually taped something for the Giants from my apartment that's on the Giants YouTube channel, just kind of going over the Giants free agent moves and everything that's going on with the team and the other teams in the NFC East. So we're all kind of making this adjustment. It's weird. Hopefully we can get this curve down and we can get back to sort of living a normal life. But it's kind of scary. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I'm with you. It is scary, and absolutely. We all have to stay safe, be safe, and follow what Governor Cuomo was telling us to do. Before we get to some of the current Giants topics that you're covering and some of our listeners want to know about, I thought this is the kind of time of year or situation where I'd ask you a few just random other Giants questions. So I wanted to know, what's your favorite Giants game you've ever called if I said to you, you cannot pick a Super Bowl, some other game? What's your favorite Giant game you ever called?
That's a great question, and there's a lot of areas to throw into that. So let's see. Non-Super Bowl. All right, I'll give you the 2000 NFC Championship game when the Giants beat the Vikings 41-0 at MetLife Giants Stadium at the time. And a lot of people thought the Vikings would come in and roll over the Giants, and everyone thought, you know, if there was bad weather – that would play into the Giants' favor. And actually, the Giants were ecstatic that the weather was unseasonably warm for that game, because Giants offensive coordinator Sean Payton, who's now the head coach of the New Orleans Saints, when he saw the weather forecast, and all the media and all the fans and everybody nationally was saying, boy, the Giants are hoping for bad weather to slow down this Vikings offense. Remember, they had Chris Carter, Dante Culpepper was the co-MVP, Randy Moss, Robert Smith at running back. I mean, they were loaded offensively. And everyone thought bad weather, low-scoring game would benefit the Giants. But when Sean Payton looked at that Vikings defense on tape with Tiki Barber and Kerry Collins and Amani Toomer and Ike Hilliard and Joe Jurevicius and the group, Pete Mitchell at tight end, all these players that they had, he was like, boys, we are going to score and score and score and score. I hope the weather's not bad, because we could put up 100 on them. And long story short, we know what happened. They beat them 41-0. So that's one that jumps out first and foremost. You know, the NFC Championship game at Lambeau Field in the 2007 season when the Giants beat the Green Bay Packers was pretty impressive. You know, everyone thought with it minus 20 below that this favored Brett Favre, because the Packers were used to that, and Favre had played in that weather before, and Eli Manning was from Mississippi and he's got no ability to deal with this. Eli Manning and Plaxico Burress put on an Amani Toomer put on a clinic that day, and you would have thought that it was 50 and sunny with the way Manning threw the ball in you know, frigid conditions. I mean, before the game, because we always do the game with the windows open, Lori, before the game, Carl Banks and I were on the field. We were doing these reports for Giants.com. I went up to the booth. I poured myself a tea, a Bigelow tea, and I went into the press box to go to the bathroom. I had gotten a cup of tea, put it on the windowsill, went and back into the press box, started chatting with some people or whatever. This is about 35 minutes before the game. Came back, and not only was the hot tea not hot, it was actually starting to turn to ice. That's how cold it was at Lambeau Field that day. And now I'll give you a third. Mm-hmm. I think it was 2006. The Giants were playing the Eagles in Philadelphia. They were getting destroyed. I think Eli Manning got sacked 7 times in the first half. I mean, he was being absolutely pummeled by the Eagles, and they had a big lead. And Manning and the Giants had this incredible comeback. Amani Toomer caught the game-tying touchdown. Plaxico Burress scored the overtime winner. So those are 3 that kind of jumped to mind, you know, when you asked me a question that I wasn't prepared for.
Talking to Bob Papa about the Giants, and one more before we switch to some of the current topics, and that is, be honest, before the Super Bowl, that 2007 season, the Patriots are undefeated, and the Giants are, you know, in the Super Bowl against the mighty Patriots, and Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, that first matchup there. Did you think before the game that the Giants actually had a decent chance to win and upset the Patriots in the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I did. I thought they had a chance because I was friends with some of the players on the Patriots, and I still am. Dan Copen was the center of the Patriots team. So after the regular season finale, when the Patriots finished off the 16-0 season, when they beat the Giants in that epic game at Giants Stadium,
yep.
I came off the elevator as soon as we got off the air because I had to do the coach's press conference. And as I'm going through the bowels of Giants Stadium, you have to pass the visitor's locker room to get to where the Giants locker room was. And I ran into Dan and I congratulated him and said, "Hey, Dan, congratulations. Unbelievable accomplishment." And he kind of grabbed my wrist. He goes, "Hey, Bob, thank you so much for stopping and saying that." He goes, "Man." And then he looked at me as he was holding my wrist. He goes, "Man, I hope we don't see those guys again." He goes, "I hope we do not see them again." Meaning the only way they would see the Giants again would be in the Super Bowl. So that was a telling comment that stuck with me. Now, listen, I'm going to give you full disclosure here, Lori. So I'm working for NFL Network as well. And Media Day in Tempe, Arizona, or wherever they had Media Day, the Patriots went first. So they do all the Media Day stuff and everything. And Solomon Wilcots, who's a good friend, he's working for NFL Network. And he's on the set doing the bridge between when the Patriots come out and when the Giants come out, whatever that window is. So NFL Network asked me to go on as a guest. So I go on as a guest. And we start talking about this, that, and the other thing. And on the air, I'm talking about all the ways I think the Giants have a chance to win. And I pointed back to my conversation with Dan Copen at the regular season finale. I talked about the Giants' pass rush. If you remember, also, the Patriots were in a decline. You know, they kind of barely got by the Chargers in the AFC Championship game. And remember, LaDainian Tomlinson didn't play and Phillip Rivers was banged up. They had played their best ball earlier in the year, and they were not as dominant at that point as they were during the course of the season. So I gave all these reasons why I thought the Giants had a legitimate chance to win. But, of course, my good friend Solomon Wilcots, as they have to go to break, because now the Giants are going to come, he goes, "All right." He's like pointing at me. He goes, "Come on now. I got to put you on the spot, though. Who's going to win the game?" Like, if you're going to make a bet and you were putting a bet down, who are you betting to win the game? So now I'm sitting there and I just gave 80,000 reasons why I thought the Giants would win. But he's asking me now if I'm going to make a bet. And I'm like, well, I said, how do you bet against Belichick and Brady? I mean, they're 3-0 in Super Bowls they're 17 or 18 and 0 at this point. I said, if you're asking me if I had to make a bet with my own money, I think I'd probably wind up betting on them just because of their track record. Well, we get off the air, and we're sitting like on the infield or the like right by where the Giants are going to come out of the locker room. And they come out of the locker room, unbeknownst to me, the TVs were on in the locker room. And Imani Toomer, who I've known Imani since the day he was drafted. We used to do a show for FAN from the 40-40 Club. I mean, he's my guy. He comes out, and he just gives me this sneer. He goes, "You picked against us?" And I'm like, did you not listen to the previous 20 minutes of me talking about all the reasons why I thought the Giants could win the game? But then Solomon asked me to put my money up. So I'm like, yeah, I don't know. How do you go against Belichick and Brady? And so that was a funny scene from – but I thought they could win the game. And in Super Bowl 46, I mean, I was shocked more people didn't pick the Giants were a better team. Yeah. In 2011 than the Patriots were. And, in fact, that game really shouldn't have been as close as the Hail Mary at the end of Gronkowski. I mean, the Giants dominated a lot of that football game. So, yeah, but in 07, I mean, who didn't think they had a chance to win? If you were around the team and you were traveling with the team and you saw what was going on internally that maybe not other people saw on the outside, I mean, I thought they had a great chance to win the game.
Yeah, I will say that, and I'm not always the, I think my listeners will sometimes I'm sure I can get accused of negativity, but I did actually pick, and it's on air someplace with WFAN. I was the only one of the regular WFAN on air hosts with a regular show. I picked the Giants to win. And to me, the turning point moment, exactly as you said, I thought when Tom Coughlin made the very difficult, unconventional in some ways, decision to play that last game to win, even though it had no bearing on playoff standings. And what I remember thinking at the time, Tom Coughlin's obligation was not to the league and to uphold the integrity of the game and the Patriots' undefeated season. His obligation was to give the Giants the best chance to win in the playoffs and to do right by the Giants. And I thought, if you'll recall, you're talking about the Patriots hadn't played as well towards the end of the season. I'm sure you remember Eli Manning had really been erratic. And I thought from a confidence building standpoint, the score may have said the Giants lost, but Eli really played well in that last game. And to me, it was like, that was like the building block that took him into the playoffs. After that, I thought things changed.
I don't think there's any question. And I remember also in that game, the Giants got, there was a bad penalty. I think they called like an offensive pass interference late in the game on Imani Toomer that was kind of a BS call. And it kind of really swung the game. And then the Patriots used that and then sort of seized control thereafter. But, Eli went toe-to-toe with him, and he's throwing touchdown passes left and right, and he's wheeling and dealing. And I'm like, all right, here we go, man. Let's roll into the playoffs. And here's the other thing about that that's very interesting, Lori. A lot of people don't remember this, but, you know, Sean O'Hara, who was a fantastic player for the Giants and, right, you know, started all 16 games in the regular season. Yeah. He didn't play in the playoff game. Gray Rugemer, the backup center, wound up starting, in that playoff game against Tampa, in which the Giants struggled in the first half. I think the Giants had like 4 yards of net offense in the first half or something like that. It was some crazy number or the first quarter. And I remember Imani Toomer was pretty animated in the huddle, and I think he kicked a little butt offensively and got things going. But yeah, I mean, O'Hara got hurt in that Patriots game and he did not play in the first playoff game. And if the Giants get knocked out by the Bucks, people probably would have pointed to Coughlin and said, you know, you lost your starting center in a game for no reason, and that hurt you the next week. But as it all turned out, it worked out well.
Worked out pretty well. We're talking to Bob Pompa about the Giants. All right, so a couple of my listeners, and I have some other questions for you. My listeners do as well. We'll flip to present-day Giants. And first of all, in terms of Joe Judge, what are your first impressions of Joe Judge?
Well, my first impressions have kind of been my only impressions because, you know, now with us not being allowed to be in the building, and with the travel that I had with the Golf Channel, I kind of been away for a little bit. But my initial impressions of Joe Judge is just what the doctor ordered. I mean, literally just what the doctor ordered, in the sense that I think his views and his ideals are very much more in line with what I think Giants fans are used to. You know, that Coughlin, Parcells sort of mindset of like kind of how to go about business. And I love this whole concept because too many times coaches, and look, I've been part of the Giants broadcast team since 1988, doing the pre and the post game before I became the full-time voice of the team in 95. So I've been there since Parcells. And I've been there since Parcells had only had one Super Bowl win under his belt, let alone the two. I saw Ray Hanley, and I was there with Dan Reeves and Jim Fossil and right on through. And the one thing that really struck me about Joe Judge is, don't tell me what a guy can't do. You know, let's teach him to do what he needs to do. And if a guy has limitations, let's find out what the guy's strength is and then use that. And that is right out of the Bill Belichick playbook, which kind of goes to the Parcells playbook. You know, when Parcells had players, he used to get all over his assistant coaches about, I don't want to hear what they can't do. Tell me what they do well, and then let's figure out how to use what they do well. And I feel like the Giants have gotten away from that a little bit, you know, as opposed, you know, with so much about, well, he can't do this and he can't do that and he can't do this. And I mean, Ben McAdoo wasn't a big fan of Eli Manning. He can't do this. He can't do that. He's not. Stop telling me about, stop with this trying to roll Eli out and have him throw on the run like Aaron Rodgers. He's not. But Eli Manning has won 2 Super Bowl MVPs. And by the way, when he won his second Super Bowl MVP, he was only 31. So he's got 2 Super Bowl MVPs in his back pocket. Rodgers is still looking for another Super Bowl. So don't tell me that Eli can't do this, that, and the other thing like Rodgers. No. When you got a good running game and a good offensive line and you use play action, Eli Manning under center with a mix and shotgun is as good as they get. But don't start trying to get guys to do things they don't do. And Joe Judge comes from that school of, we're going to find out what you do well, and then we're going to get you to do that to the best of your ability. And if a guy can't do something, we're not going to ask him to do something. And if a guy doesn't understand something, we're going to teach him. We're going to teach. We're going to teach. We're going to teach. And I think that's a very refreshing impression that I'm getting from the guy.
Yeah, I think also, to your point, that Joe Judge is, a lot's been made, he's a special teams coach, is he's obviously not scheme reliant, married to one particular scheme. And I think in the past, the Giants have had guys, this is my scheme, and therefore then it's more about fitting people into it. But so with him as a new head coach, of course, this would be the time of year we'd be starting it. We're talking about OTAs, and the new head coaches get a little more time with their team. That we don't know when we're getting back to football or what's going to happen, but any idea, you know, how big a disadvantage is that for these new head coaches, and what can new head coaches be doing right now to try and get to know their rosters better?
It's a great question. I mean, yeah, especially for a new head coach who's a first-year head coach in a new place, as opposed to maybe becoming a new head coach in a place in which he's familiar with all the players. I think it's a lot of abstract. I mean, they can look at film until their eyes are bloodshot, and they can study this, and they can have the video guys work on a zillion different projects, and they can have new assistants look at that. But until you actually get the feel of a guy's body language that you're working with, and you get the feel of a player's actual movements as opposed to what you see on tape, it's kind of just guessing. I mean, you know, it's like in line play or whatever, or in boxing or basketball with the battle underneath. You can look at all the film you want, but until you feel another man leaning against you, there's no way to judge it then when you actually do it. So I think, look, it's going to be a hard spot for him. And I think the coaches that have been in places for a prolonged period of time are going to have a little bit of an advantage because they know their players a lot better. I mean, think about it. Joe Judge is going into this, and some of his best players, you know, he hasn't worked with. He hasn't Daniel Jones, Saquon Barkley, and just go through the list. So it's a tough challenge, but you know, hopefully they get things back up and running. And hey, remember in 2011, there was no off-season program, there was no veteran mini camp, there were no rookie mini camp, whatever, because we had a lockout, and everybody reported for training camp. And Lori, you as a Giant fan know what happens.
Yep.
They won Super Bowl 46, so maybe some of that's a little overblown.
Talking to Bob Pompa about the Giants. Bob, if I asked you to forecast ahead and look at the draft, as you know, Dave Gettleman has never, ever traded down. Is this going to be the year Dave Gettleman trades down in the first round of the draft? And what, you know, if you're thinking about the first couple of rounds, what sort of players would you be looking for if you were Gettleman?
Well, I mean, this is a year in which trading down could seem like a pretty good plan. Look, we don't know. First of all, we don't know what Washington's going to do, right? Because we don't know what Ron Rivera thought of Dwayne Haskins last year when Haskins was coming out. And remember, Cam Newton was coming off foot surgery, shoulder surgery. So they obviously did the due diligence on the quarterbacks because they wound up drafting Will Greer. Maybe Ron Rivera loved Dwayne Haskins and he's excited to be coaching. Maybe Ron Rivera thought that Dwayne Haskins wasn't even worthy of a first round pick. And he's got a chance to get Tua, who everybody in the world says is a difference maker. Maybe yep. they do what Arizona does and take a quarterback in the first round again. I don't know. We're just guessing, right? Then you get the Lions. Let's say Washington doesn't take a quarterback. And see, the Lions are in play here because between, you know, the Chargers and the Miami Dolphins, if a quarterback doesn't go number two and two is on the board, if either one of those teams loves them, you got to make a play with Detroit to try to make sure that you secure Tua. So I think for the Giants, it's a little tough to kind of gauge at this point because you don't know what's going to happen in front of them. I mean, if two is off the board, I don't think anybody's trading with the Lions or the Giants for picks 3 and 4 to go get one of the other quarterbacks. I think then you just sit there and you make a pick. If Tua is still on the board, and let's say the Lions can't work out a deal and the Giants are sitting there and Tua is on the board, well, you'd be foolish not to make a trade because one of those two teams is going to try to go get him.
Yep. Let me ask you, one of my listeners, Richard, wanted to know, is there a disconnect between a win-now general manager, which certainly Dave Gettleman, whether it's his, you know, age and experience or being on the hot seat, Gettleman sort of needs to be, and this rebuilding roster with a second-year quarterback? Is there anything in the timing there that feels like it's at odds?
No, because I think what people only know what they know, and they don't know kind of like what's going on the inside. And being in the building every day like I am, I think that I'm not going to say that Dave Gettleman has handled all this the best way as far as the PR component of it is. And I know that he's rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. But I will tell you this. I think that there's a lot more of a plan than people think there is. And I think, you know, there were a lot of people that were jumping to conclusions about how good the Giants could be 2 years ago. And if you were in there internally, you kind of had a pretty good feeling of what they actually thought. Did they misgauge a little bit last year with the whole Eli thing? I think they thought they were a better team than they actually were. And that was a mistake that was made. But I think that Gettleman, from his experience and being with this organization for as long as he was in his previous stint, and for the respect that he has for ownership, both the Mara and Tisch family. I think he knows he has to win because ownership wants him to win. But I think he also knows that he also has to take care. He's also a caretaker of the franchise for the long haul. So I think it's a balancing act, but I think he's aware of it. He's not going to do it. I mean, look what they did in free agency. I know we're going to get to that in a little bit. But they didn't throw stupid money at Clowney. They didn't throw stupid money at a lot of these guys, which you could view as, hey, these would be some quick fixes to go sign some of these guys. But they were kind of measured in what they did as far as free agency, which leads me to believe that he understands that we don't want to bankrupt things moving forward because there is still a lot of work to be done.
Yeah, you mentioned free agency, so certainly Giants fans, you know, saw they went out and strengthened the linebacker position, Blake Martinez, James Bradbury, maybe the number two cornerback on the market in on a lot of people's boards. Kyle Fackrell, also potentially from the Packers, potentially rushing the passer there. Cam Fleming at offensive tackle. Of all these moves and others the Giants have made in free agency, which one is there one that stands out to you that you say, you know what, this one's my favorite move?
Good question. I think Blake Martinez is a better football player than people think. He's a football player. I do my show on Sirius XM NFL Radio, and I have for years with Ed McCaffrey, and I've known Ed since he was drafted by the Giants, so we've always had a good relationship. And doing the show together, we've had Blake Martinez on as a guest. Blake Martinez played his college ball at Stanford. Ed's son Christian played at Stanford.
Right.
He knows the Martinez family very well, does Ed. He knows Blake Martinez as the player and as the person very well. And I think, you know, Blake Martinez is just one of these guys. I don't know if he's going to be Antonio Pierce. But remember, Antonio Pierce was an undrafted free agent who the Giants wound up signing from the Washington Redskins because the Redskins didn't really want to keep him. They didn't think he was frontline material at a high level. I think Blake Martinez has a lot of that in his game because his football IQ is off the charts. He can play three downs for you. And some guys, what they don't have in measurables, they make up in IQ. And, you know, if your brain is reacting accurately, it tells your feet where to go. And whatever split seconds you're missing on your 40 time, you're making it up in intelligence. So I'm fired up about the Martinez. Bradbury is, listen, based on the market, I thought Bradbury was a very sensible deal. All right, $45 million, $32 million guaranteed. For anybody listening at home, especially in these economic times, they're like, what? But I think Bradbury was a good pickup, another good, smart football player that has a high football IQ, because that's what Joe Judge wants. Look at what the Patriots have done. Look what Vrabel's done in Tennessee. They want guys that understand multiple positions and understand the big scope of things. And I like some of the moves that Gettleman made and the staff made in the draft last year with DeAndre Baker and Corey Ballantyne and Julian Love. And I think better coaching is going to be a big factor, because I think I like Pat Shurmur, and I thought, first of all, he was a good person. I think he's a super smart offensive guy. Maybe he bit off more than he can chew by calling the plays and all that other stuff. But kind of the one knock that when you look back on Shurmur's 2 years with the Giants is I'm not sure he had the best staff possible. And I think that what Joe Judge has done, he's put together a really good staff. And I think some of these young players that struggled, I think they're going to be better. I think Mark Colombo is the offensive line coach, is a huge upgrade, which is why I like the Cam Fleming deal. If Fleming's not your starting right tackle, the Giants have had no swing tackles. Now you got a guy that can start in a pinch if you have to. It's a one-year deal. It's not a lot of money. And then Levine Toloilo, is a really good, smart pickup. Well, a lot of people couldn't pick him out of a lineup, I'm sure. A lot of fans like, who?
So maybe you could.
But you know what? There are guys that are just football players. Like Dan Campbell was a guy that played tight end for the Giants. He just became a good football player that lasted in the NFL for a long time. Not just with the Giants, but then with the Dallas Cowboys. And he wound up being a coach down in Miami and got a chance to be a head coach. Tololo is a really good football player, understands all the positions, can make plays in the passing game, but can really help your O-line in the run game. I mean, he's an elite blocking tight end who can also catch the ball. It's not like he's got bricks in his hands. So I think that's another signing that's very under the radar, but I think could be really good.
Bob Papa, radio voice of the New York Giants. I could do this for hours, but it's time for an update, so I'm going to have to say goodbye. But stay safe, and we'll catch up, I'm sure, down the road. Really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, Lori, pleasure to be on with you, and enjoy the rest of your evening. And doing the show from home is a challenge, but just make sure you stay safe.